therefore are to be observed with an equal exactness towards good and bad men. Now do but think thus justly of charity or love to your neighbor, that it is founded upon reasons that vary not, that have no dependence upon the merits of men, and then you will find it as possible to perform the same exact charity as the same exact justice to all men, whether good or bad. You will perhaps farther ask if you are not to have a particular esteem, veneration, and reverence for good men. It is answered, yes. But then this high esteem and veneration is a thing very different from that love of benevolence which we owe to our neighbor. The high esteem and veneration which you have for a man of eminent piety is no act of charity to him. It is not out of pity and compassion that you so reverence him, but it is rather an act of charity to yourself that such esteem and veneration may excite you to follow his example. You may and ought to love, like, and approve the life which the good man leads, but then this is only the loving of virtue wherever we see it. And we do not love virtue with the love of benevolence as anything that wants our good wishes, but as something that is our proper good. The whole of the matter is this. The actions which you are to love, esteem, and admire are the actions of good and pious men. But the persons to whom you are to do all the good you can, in all sorts of kindness and compassion, are all persons, whether good or bad. This distinction betwixt love of benevolence and esteem or veneration is very plain and obvious, and you may perhaps still better see the plainness and necessity of it by this following instance. No man is to have a high esteem or honor for his own accomplishments or behavior, yet every man is to love himself, that is, to wish well to himself. Therefore, this distinction betwixt love and esteem is not only plain, but very necessary to be observed. Again, if you think it hardly possible to dislike the actions of unreasonable men, and yet have a true love for them, consider this with relation to yourself. It is very possible, I hope, for you not only to dislike, but to detest and abhor a great many of your own past actions, and to accuse yourself of great folly for them. But do you then lose any of those tender sentiments toward yourself which you used to have? Do you then cease to wish well to yourself? Is not the love of yourself as strong then as at any other time? Now what is thus possible with relations to ourselves is in the same manner possible with relations to others. We may have the highest good wishes towards them, desiring for them every good that we desire for ourselves, and yet at the same time dislike their way of life. To proceed, all that love which we may justly have for ourselves, we are in strict justice obliged to exercise towards all other men, and we offend against the great law of our nature and the greatest laws of God when our tempers towards others are different from those which we have towards ourselves. Now that self-love which is just and reasonable keeps us constantly tender, compassionate, and well affected toward ourselves. If, therefore, you do not feel these kind dispositions towards all people, you may be assured that you are not in that state of charity, which is the very life and soul of Christian piety. You know how it hurts you to be made the jest and ridicule of other people, how it grieves you to be robbed of your reputation and deprived of the favorable opinion of your neighbors. If, therefore, you expose others to scorn and contempt in any degree, if it pleases you to see or hear of their frailties and infirmities, or if you are only loath to conceal their faults, you are so far from loving such people as yourself that you may be justly supposed to have as much hatred for them as you have love for yourself. For such tempers are as truly the proper fruits of hatred as the contrary tempers are the proper fruits of love. And as it is a certain sign that you love yourself because you are tender of everything that concerns you, so it is a certain sign that you hate your neighbor when you are pleased with anything that hurts him. But now, if the want of a true and exact charity be so great a want, that, as St. Paul saith, it renders our greatest virtues but empty sounds and tinkling cymbals, how highly does it concern us to study every art, and to practice every method of raising our souls to this state of charity. It is for this reason that you are here desired not to let this hour of prayer pass without a full and solemn supplication to God for all the instances of an universal love and benevolence to all mankind, such daily constant devotion being the only likely means of preserving you in such a state of love as is necessary to prove you to be a true follower of Jesus Christ. Chapter 21. Of the necessity and benefit of intercession considered as an exercise of universal love. How all orders of men are to pray and intercede with God for one another. How naturally such intercession amends and reforms the hearts of those that use it. That intercession is a great and necessary part of Christian devotion is very evident from Scripture. The first followers of Christ seem to support all their love and to maintain all their intercourse and correspondence by mutual prayers for one another. St. Paul, whether he writes to churches or particular persons, shows his intercession to be perpetual for them, that they are a constant subject of his prayers. Thus to the Philippians, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all making request with joy. Philippians 1, 3 and 4. Here we see not only a continual intercession, but performed with so much gladness, it shows that it was an exercise of love in which he highly rejoiced. His devotion had also the same care for particular persons, as appears by the following passages. I thank God, whom I serve from my forefathers, with a pure conscience, that without ceasing I have remembrance of thee in my prayers, day and night. 2 Timothy 1 and 3. How holy an acquaintance and friendship was this, how worthy of persons that were raised above the world and related to one another as new members of a kingdom of heaven. Apostles and great saints did not only thus benefit and bless particular churches and private persons, but they themselves also received graces from God by the prayers of others. Thus saith St. Paul to the Corinthians, you also helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. 2 Corinthians 1:11. This was the ancient friendship of Christians, uniting and cementing their hearts, not by worldly considerations or human passions, but by the mutual communication of spiritual blessings, by prayers and thanksgivings to God for one another. It was this holy intercession that raised Christians to such a state of mutual love as far exceeded all that had been praised and admired in human friendship. And when the same spirit of intercession is again in the world, when Christianity has the same power over the hearts of people that it then had, this holy friendship will be again in fashion, and Christians will be again the wonder of the world for that exceeding love which they bear to one another. For a frequent intercession with God, earnestly beseeching him to forgive the sins of all mankind, to bless them with his providence, enlighten them with his spirit, and bring them to everlasting happiness, is the divinest exercise that the heart of man can be engaged in. Be daily, therefore, on your knees, in a solemn, deliberate performance of this devotion, praying for others in such forms, with such length, importunity, and earnestness, as you use for yourself. And you will find all little, ill-natured passions die away, your heart grow great and generous, delighting in the common happiness of others, as you used only to delight in your own. For he that daily prays to God that all men may be happy in heaven takes the likeliest way to make him wish for and delight in their happiness on earth. And it is hardly possible for you to beseech and entreat God to make anyone happy in the highest enjoyments of his glory to all eternity, and yet be troubled to see him enjoy the much smaller gifts of God in this short and low state of human life. For how strange and unnatural would it be to pray to God to grant health and a longer life to a sick man, and at the same time to envy him the poor pleasure of agreeable medicines. Yet this would be no more strange or unnatural than to pray to God that your neighbor may enjoy the highest degrees of his mercy and favor, and yet at the same time envy him the little credit and figure he hath among his fellow creatures. When therefore you have once habituated your heart to a serious performance of this holy intercession, you have done a great deal to render it incapable of spite and envy, and to make it naturally delight in the happiness of all mankind. This is the natural effect of a general intercession for all mankind. But the greatest benefits of it are then received when it descends to such particular instances as our state and condition in life more particularly require of us. Though we are to treat all mankind as neighbors and brethren, as any occasion offers, yet as we can only live in the actual society of a few, and are, by our state and condition, more particularly related to some than others, so when our intercession is made an exercise of love and care for those amongst us whom our lot is fallen, or who belong to us in a nearer relation, it then becomes the greatest benefit to ourselves, and produces its best effects in our own hearts. If, therefore, you should always change and alter your intercessions, according as the needs and necessities of your neighbors or acquaintance seem to require, beseeching God to deliver them from such or such particular evils, or to grant them this or that particular gift or blessing, such intercessions, besides the great charity of them, would have a mighty effect upon your own heart, as disposing you to every other good office, and to the exercise of every other virtue towards such persons, as have so often a place in your prayers. This would make it pleasant to you to be courteous, civil, and condescending to all about you, and make you unable to say or do a rude or hard thing to those for whom you had used yourself to be so kind and compassionate in your prayers. For there is nothing that makes us love a man so much as praying for him, and when you can once do this sincerely for any man, you have fitted your soul for the performance of everything that is kind and civil towards him. This will fill your heart with a generosity and tenderness that will give you a better and sweeter behavior than anything that is called fine greeting and good manners. By considering yourself as an advocate with God for your neighbors and acquaintance, you would never find it hard to be at peace with them yourself. It would be easy to you to bear with and forgive those for whom you particularly implored the divine mercy and forgiveness. Such prayers as these amongst neighbors and acquaintance would unite them to one another in the strongest bonds of love and tenderness. It would exalt and ennoble their souls and teach them to consider one another in a higher state as members of a spiritual society that are created for the enjoyment of the common blessings of God and fellow heirs of the same future glory. And by being thus desirous that everyone should have his full share of the favors of God, they would not only be content, but glad to see one another happy in the little enjoyments of this transitory life. These would be the natural effects of such an intercession amongst people of the same town or neighborhood, or that were acquainted with one another's state and condition. Orenius, footnote 42. Orenius means heavenly. Orenius is a holy priest, full of the spirit of the gospel, watching, laboring, and praying for a poor country village. Every soul in it is as dear to him as himself, and he loves them all as he loves himself, because he prays for them all as often as he prays for himself. If his whole life is one continual exercise of great zeal and labor, hardly ever satisfied with any degrees of care and watchfulness, it is because he has learned the great value of souls by so often appearing before God as an intercessor for them. He never thinks he can love or do enough for his flock, because he never considers them in any other view than as so many persons, that by receiving the gifts and graces of God, are to become his hope, his joy, and his crown of rejoicing. He goes about his parish and visits everybody in it, but visits in the same spirit of piety that he preaches to them. He visits them to encourage their virtues, to assist them with his advice and counsel, to discover their manner of life, and to know the state of their souls, that he may intercede with God for them according to their particular necessities. When Irenaeus first entered into holy orders, he had a haughtiness in his temper, a great contempt and disregard for all foolish and unreasonable people. But he has prayed away this spirit, and has now the greatest tenderness for the most obstinate sinners, because he is always hoping that God will, sooner or later, hear those prayers that he makes for their repentance. The rudeness, ill nature, or perverse behavior of any of his flock used at first to betray him into impatience, but it now raises no other passion in him than a desire of being upon his knees in prayer to God for them. Thus have his prayers for others altered and amended the state of his own heart. It would strangely delight you to see with what spirit he converses, with what tenderness he reproves, with what affection he exhorts, and with what vigor he preaches. And it is all owing to this, because he reproves, exhorts, and preaches to those for whom he first prays to God. This devotion softens his heart, enlightens his mind, sweetens his temper, and makes everything that comes from him instructive, amiable, and affecting. At his first coming to his little village, it was as disagreeable to him as a prison, and every day seemed too tedious to be endured in so retired a place. He thought his parish was too full of poor and mean people, that were none of them fit for the conversation of a gentleman. This put him upon a close application to his studies. He kept much at home, writ notes upon Homer and Plautus, and sometimes thought it hard to be called to pray by any poor body when he was just in the midst of one of Homer's battles. This was his polite, or I might rather say poor, ignorant turn of mind before devotion had got the government of his heart. But now his days are so far from being tedious, or his parish too great a retirement, that he now only wants more time to do that variety of good which his soul thirsts after. The solitude of his little parish has become matter of great comfort to him, because he hopes that God has placed him and his flock there to make it their way to heaven. He can now not only converse with, but gladly attend and wait upon the poorest kind of people. He is now daily watching over the weak and infirm, humbling himself to perverse, rude, ignorant people, wherever he can find them, and is so far from desiring to be considered as a gentleman, that he desires to be used as a servant of all, and in the spirit of his Lord and Master girds himself, and is glad to kneel down and wash any of their feet. He now thinks the poorest creature in his parish good enough and great enough to deserve the humblest attendances, the kindest friendships, the tenderest offices he can possibly show them. He is so far now from wanting agreeable company that he thinks there is no better conversation in the world than to be talking with poor and mean people about the kingdom of heaven. All these noble thoughts and divine sentiments are the effects of his great devotion. He presents every one so often before God in his prayers that he never thinks he can esteem, reverence, or serve those enough for whom he implores so many mercies from God. Irenaeus is mightily affected with this passage of Holy Scripture. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. James 5:16. This makes him practice all the arts of holy living and aspire after every instance of piety and righteousness, that his prayers for his flocks may have their full force and avail much with God. For this reason he has sold a small estate that he had, and has erected a charitable retirement for ancient poor people, to live in prayer and piety, that his prayers, being assisted by such good works, may pierce the clouds and bring down blessings upon those souls committed to his care. Irenaeus reads how God himself said unto Abimelech concerning Abraham, "He is a prophet, he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live." Genesis 20:7. And again how he said of Job, "And my servant Job shall pray for you, for him will I accept." Job 13:8. From these passages, Irenaeus justly concludes that the prayers of men eminent for holiness of life have an extraordinary power with God, that he grants to other people such pardons, reliefs, and blessings.